The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. Approaching 5 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, it's the 6th of September 2023, and you're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. We have a busy show for you as always, and our lines are open for you to raise your issues, to have your say, and so on and so forth. 086 60 25 000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25 000. If you're listening outside the Republic of Ireland, 00353 86 60 25 000. And if you want to give us a buzz, 07491 25 000. The team for the next week or so is me, Donna Marie, and Niamh, and we'll look after you. If you want to email us, it's comments@highlandradio.com. All right, let's have a look at what's making some of the papers today. Quite interesting, some of the stories. We'll see as we go through them. We'll start with the Finn Valley Voice. A Bella Buffet man who suffered a traumatic workplace accident nearly 1 year ago plans to take on an aerial climb. Marius McCloskey, a tree surgeon for over 30 years, was left with chronic injuries when he fell almost 20 feet from a tree on 10th of September 22. He was told it was immeasurable how close he came to not walking again by a consultant at LUH. Marius is married to Caroline, and they have a child, Kiva, and he's going to climb Errigal. We wish him every success in that endeavour. The Inish Times tells us this morning that a series of public meetings are taking place around the county over the coming weeks to give affected homeowners information about the Enhanced Effective Block Scheme. The meetings are being hosted by the Mica Action Group, MAG, and are aimed at bringing homeowners up to date on the new Defective Concrete Block Remediation Scheme, which opened to applications at the beginning of July. The first meeting takes place at the Malinhead Community Centre on Monday, September 11th at 7 p.m. All the meetings will include speakers from the redress focus groups who will address issues around banking and insurance. And I've had a bit of a spike or a peak lately in people in council-owned accommodation that they're living in and renting from the council, not getting much information. Houses deteriorating very, very quickly, and they're feeling very anxious about the winter ahead. Now, I'm not sure if it's across the board or just some tenants, but if you can give us a sense of the situation there. As I say, people, obviously, there's the private homeowners, but there are those living in local authority housing whose houses are worsening all the while. Some are contacting me saying that they've had no contact at all, or they don't know what the plan is or where they're going to go, but they're starting to feel really desperate that their homes are unsafe. If that's you as well, let me know, 086 60 25 000, if it's something that we need to be talking a little bit more about. The Donegal Post tells us that planning permission has been granted for significant changes to the development at the Mullins, Donegal Town. The new plans still include a swimming pool and associated facilities, but will see significantly more residential units than originally planned. Originally hailed as a modern flagship development for Donegal Town, the initial plans included housing, a swimming pool, transport hub, community and leisure building, a bulky goods building and office facilities. However, conditional planning permission has been granted for a number of modifications to the major site just outside Donegal Town. Changes include the omission of the bulky goods building and the community and leisure building to allow for construction of an additional 28 houses. This includes 4 2-bedroomed houses, 8 3-bedroomed houses, 12 4-bedroom houses and 4 5-bedroomed houses. On to the Irish Independent, and though the government has been looking at this, we're told, for a couple of years, this has come somewhat out of the blue to me in any case. And this is the decision by government to press ahead with a significant reduction in speed limits. They say it is in the wake of the recent spate of road tragedy, the awful loss of life that we've all experienced. Well, speed limits are set to be cut on a significant number of roads as authorities seek to reduce the number of deaths and serious injuries. Limits will be lowered to 80 kilometres on national secondary roads. They're at 100 currently. 60 kilometres on local and rural roads. Now, you know yourself, the silly little narrow roads with grass going up the middle of them, sometimes they're currently 80. They're going to be dropped to 60. I don't think anyone would see an issue with that. In town centres and housing estates, 30 kilometres would be the new speed limits. This is part of a major government overhaul. After a summer of tragedy on Ireland's roads, Junior Transport Minister Jack Chambers will bring the details of a comprehensive speed limit review to Cabinet within weeks. It's proposed the most significant changes to speed limits on Irish roads in nearly two decades. The government hopes the proposed overhaul will make roads safer and reduce the rate of fatalities, with 127 people dying following road crashes this year. Now, as I say, this could have a significant implications. A, of course, in terms of reducing the number of road deaths. If that is what it does, could anyone truly argue against that? But also increasing the time it will take to travel around the place. Now, it is a little bit complex because they're lowering the default limits, but they can still be varied upwards. So, in other words, if I understand it correctly, whilst, say, for instance, the Ballyshannon to Donegal Town Road, it would not necessarily be 80. I think the council could vary that upwards. I think that's a secondary road, isn't it? As I say, it's really complex, and I, along with probably you listening out there, will get a better grasp and feel for what is being proposed. But it effectively could see significant reductions on the roads that you drive in terms of speed limits. Now, there are those that might say maybe more enforcement is the way to go. That there is a small cohort of speeders out there, because whilst it's shocking that 800 odd people are caught speeding during a national slowdown day, they do clock, you know, well in excess of 100,000 people. So the majority of people are driving within the limits. So would it be better to enforce the current speed limits more and catch those that are flouting them? Or do you think it's right that all limits should be dropped, because it saves lives? 0886 60 25,000. It could be in place by the end of 2024, early 2025, but it would be really, really significant in terms of, you know, getting about the place. On to the Irish Times now, and Enoch Burke is due back before the courts again, it seems. A fresh application has been brought before the High Court that could see teacher Enoch Burke return to prison over his alleged ongoing refusal to stay away from Wilson's Hospital School in County Westmeath. During yesterday's vacation sitting of the High Court, lawyers representing the school's Board of Management said its client is seeking orders for Burke's attachment and committal to prison over his alleged refusal to comply with a permanent injunction granted by Mr. Justice Alexander Owens earlier this year. The order restrains Mr. Burke from attending at Wilson's Hospital unless he is given express permission to do so by school authorities. Rosemary Mallon for the board told Ms. Justice Emily Egan that Mr. Burke has attended at the school from where he was suspended and ultimately dismissed every day since the new school year commenced in late August. Mr. Burke has claimed that the board's action against him arises out of his opposition to transgenderism and his deeply held Christian beliefs. The board denies that claim. Ms. Mallon said that his attending both outside and inside the school was in breach of the permanent injunction granted by Mr. Justice Owen. They went on to argue then too that the principal and all the teachers, much of their day is spent policing his movements, and there is some distress for pupils as well, but he's seemingly sticking to his guns. He went back to school, and he's got quite a commute to go to school. And it looks like he'll end up going back to jail by the weekend. The Irish Daily Mail this morning: tensions have flared among councillors who voted against dozens of modular homes for over 200 Ukrainians, putting the government's refugee strategy under renewed pressure. It comes as hundreds of refugees are set to move into tents at the Electric Picnic site in County Laois after being forced to leave student accommodation. And organisers of the National Ploughing Championship confirmed yesterday that they were approached by the government to provide tented accommodation for Ukrainians, as the Department of Integration desperately tries to source housing for people fleeing war-torn countries. Wicklow County Council this week voted against two sites chosen for 68 modular homes. Councillors were asked to vote whether or not to lease 1.82 hectares of land in Baltinglass 4, and I'll just switch to page 4, for the development of 38 rapid build units, which could accommodate up to 152 people. They also voted on a 1.37 hectare site in Dunlavin, which would have seen 30 rapid build homes installed. It's funny, you've got like down south in Wicklow, you've got councillors voting against the construction of, you know, a ton of rapid build modular homes. And then you move towards the northwest and you've got councillors' calls for this type of accommodation to be provided for defective concrete block homeowners falling completely on deaf ears. It's been completely ruled out. It's funny how, and I'm not conflating housing crisis through defective concrete and the refugee crisis, but I'm just saying that in one county, you've got councillors voting against this type of housing for refugees, and then you've got councillors up here begging for this type of housing for people affected by defective concrete. It's a bizarre sort of comparison, or contrast maybe is a better word indeed. Okay, the Irish Sun this morning: the National Lottery isn't doing enough to protect problem gamblers, according to their regulators' findings. I don't think they're doing enough to stop encouraging gambling, because they push you quite a lot of notifications saying it's time to gamble. Well, in their annual report, the Lotto Watchdog withheld €150,000 from Premier Lotteries Ireland after they were found to be in breach of their licence. The Office of the Regulator found it was still possible for customers who had opted for permanent self-exclusion to purchase tickets by opening a separate account. The money which was withheld was subsequently returned to the Exchequer to be distributed to a number of good causes, so they need to be doing more. Do you have an issue in your home with problem gambling as it relates to the Lotto? Maybe it's a story you wish to share anonymously with us. You know the contact details, or if you wanted to send me a message on Facebook, if you felt it was more confidential, although it's not, please feel free to do so. We mentioned the National Ploughing Championship. It's a huge event, isn't it? Well, the National Ploughing Association has defended hiking at the gate ticket prices for this month's championship to €30. A lot of you out there go to the Ploughing Championships, have done religiously. Is €30 too much? It's a big show. There's a lot going on there. It's quite expensive when you get in there too. What do you think of €30 at the gate? It also warned visitors that they may not even be able to buy tickets on the gate. Cash tickets will only be for sale on the gate at the event, which takes place at in County Leash, of course, from September 19th to 2021. If there's a surplus. So in other words, if you go, right, I'm not buying my ticket in advance, I want to use cash. Well, you could rock up to the gate theoretically, and if they have sold enough online tickets, they don't have any other tickets available, they might actually refuse you entry, which is a bit coercive towards getting your tickets online in advance, isn't it? Well, punters can buy tickets online for €25, as organisers say they're moving more towards a cashless system. Anne-Marie McHugh, the MPA's assistant managing director, said, "We've tried really hard for the general public to know that only surplus tickets will be available for €30 on the gate." So there's a €5 levy and the risk of not getting a ticket at all if you wish to use cash at the Ploughing Championships. Not reading the audience too well, I don't think. And the net could be closing ever tighter on the Kinahans. This is in the Irish Daily Star. Garda Commissioner Drew Harris and several top officers have jetted to Dubai as efforts intensified to deport mob boss Daniel Kinahan. It was confirmed yesterday. In a big development, Mr. Harris, Assistant Commissioner of Organised Crime and Serious Crime Justin Kelly, and a delegation of senior Gardaí met with Dubai police this week to discuss the eventual deportation of Christy Kinahan Sr. and his sons Daniel and Christy Jr. It comes as Gardaí await a decision from the Director of Public Prosecutions on charges for all three Kinahan's cartel leaders over directing a crime gang. So effectively, Mr. Harris seemingly over there to do the propriety work for their eventual deportation back to Ireland. It was recently confirmed that Gardaí had sent a comprehensive file to the DPP asking for Daniel Kinahan, his father Christy Sr. and brother Christy Jr. to be charged in connection with directing an organised crime gang. Encrypted conversations are understood to form part of the case, and Gardaí are hoping to prove in court that Daniel Kinahan directed the activities of the murderous gang. He's out there at the moment setting the groundwork, presumably, for their extraditions. All right, that's a run through what's making the papers this morning. 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Now we're joined on the programme by the Morgans, Joe Morgan, and Aoife is there as well. And unfortunately, I don't have everybody's name here, so you're going to have to introduce yourself.
Elaine.
Okay, sorry about that. Sorry about that, Elaine. I just didn't have it here in front of me. I suppose we've come a bit of a distance in terms of trying to get people on a national scale to talk about this awful crisis. So it was good, I suppose, to see primetime focusing on it again, once again, last night. Joe, starting with you first, if you don't mind. What was in the programme? What came from the programme? What stood out for you?
Yeah, I think, look, it was a difficult programme for ourselves personally, Greg, just relative to the actual activity that we were involved in. When Rita was up on site, we were taking the house down. So that was challenging. But I do think it's important that the stark reality of what families are facing is out there and that people understand it. The key reason that we wanted to participate is that, look, we have a scheme. It's not 100%. It's not going to be 100%. The current government are not going to deliver that. So we are trying to work with what we have and trying to move forward. But what we're finding, and it is our experience, and Donna McDade was the same, it's absolutely impossible to engage with the current scheme. Like, we still, which we have approval from the council to demolish the house and rebuild it, we don't have approval to draw funds from the scheme. So they call it stage two approval. And we've submitted all of the documentation, 160 pages of detailed data relative to that application. And we don't have it yet. That went in November. And we were told it was a 3-month timeline relative to application in to getting approval. So we didn't do anything over the Christmas period. And then we started to plan, because this is a construction product, right? We need to be able to plan. And unfortunately, right now, the cog in the wheel that we cannot plan for is the administration within Donegal County Council. And it's not just ourselves. There are a number of families commenting on social media over the last couple of months that there is nothing happening within the council. And I am on to them weekly. I've spoke to the front desk. I've emailed lead engineers. I speak to councillors regularly. And nobody can tell me what is happening internally with the administration of the scheme within the council. And nobody can tell me when I'll finally be able to access funds to rebuild the house. As of right now, we're stalled. The contractor's had to go off site because he's not going to wait. And we're just waiting with no indication of when that stage two might come through.
It's completely open-ended then. There's nothing absolutely to indicate when. And then, of course, I presume then, if you do get past that next stage, you have to find another slot with the contractor.
Absolutely, Greg. Yeah, I mean, everything is hinged now on that administrative step within the council. Even as far as conversations that we're having with our lender, the application process for finance needs that clarification from the council before they'll even start the discussion. So, one, we have had to let the contractor go, and I don't know when I'm going to get him back. Realistically, given we're going into the winter, it'll probably be next year now, and we could have had the entire summer to start activity. And then on top of that, we've a conversation to have with our lender, which we've been unable to start as well. So everything is stalled, and the council have to recognise they're a cog in a construction project. They need to be able to provide visibility and transparency as to what it is they're doing and how long it's going to take.
What percentage of a scheme do you think it is for you?
We're coming in at about 65%.
Wow. Elaine, this is all just stress on top of stress on top of stress, isn't it? I mean, this is only, you know, another part of this nightmare that you've been living through.
Yeah, and I suppose, like, one of the stresses is finding out your house is defective block and you have to move out, and there's all of that stress. There's then the, you know, as Joseph had said, you know, we had to plan for all of this. So originally we were going to plan and move into a rented house last year, because my son was doing his leaving cert. We wanted a little bit of stability for him. But when we saw other homeowners being delayed, we were worried then if we moved to a rented house, we would have months and months of paying rent with not moving forward on the scheme. And I suppose that's where we decided to move to mobile homes. So the stress of getting the mobile homes, getting them connected, all of that groundwork took time. But I suppose then once we made the decision to move into the mobile homes and we were able to do something, you know, you feel better being able to do something. And then sort of IFA was starting secondary school. So lining all of that up in terms of being able to apply to local schools, you know, make connections with bus. So all of that. And once we moved into the mobile homes, Greg's, you know, our attitude kind of changed a little bit. We didn't feel, we felt safer. We feel safer living in these mobile homes than we did in our big house. And we were a bit more happier, a bit more positive and a bit better to deal with it. And we were excited at the prospect because we were originally starting the demolition in April. So we were had that to look forward to. And since then, it's just been downhill. Since April, that timeline went and we were like, okay, next one was May. That one went, you know, and then sort of when we got the go ahead says, right, well, if we pay for the demolition ourselves, we can go ahead. So that again was a little bit exciting. It's sad and exciting, but, you know, we were moving forward. Now we're in limbo again. And it's this limbo that is the most stressful thing, you know, facing into one winter. We're prepared for that. We can, you know, the mobiles aren't going to be the warmest of places, but, you know, we can live with that for 1 year. But not having a timeline, we could be here how long? Nobody can tell us.
Yeah, I mean, Aoife, you've gone through two big changes, haven't you? You've gone through the change of, I presume you had your bedroom set up the way you liked it and you were in your house, and now you've had to switch to this type of living and then switching from little school to big school, as some people might call it. How has it been for you, Aoife?
Well, on my first day of secondary school, I was extremely excited to, you know, experience the new things and go into like the new classes. That was my favorite part, actually, going into like new classes and meeting new teachers like every like 40 minutes. But when I came home, it was just a really big shock that like my bedroom and most of my house was gone.
Yeah, really tough for you. And it's something obviously you have to think about a lot, Aoife, even though you're so young, you shouldn't have to. But it's sad, isn't it? It's sad for you and the whole family.
Yeah.
Elaine, just what was the emotions like with the demolition? And we've heard from Aoife there, and we're a bit older, and I think maybe we have a bit more capacity, sort of, because life throws stuff at us, doesn't it? But it's a mixture of emotions, isn't it? Because getting it down means you're one step closer, but there's a lot of memories in there. There's a lot of life that's been lived in there. It just must be a nightmare to get the head around.
You know, back in March, you know, we took a week off work and that was our final, like we've been preparing to move out since last year. So, you know, we took everything down from the attic. And I don't know, our attic sort of like, you know, I'd, you know, sort of car shoe boxes with photos and memories. I went through all of that because obviously moving to the mobile, there's not a lot of space and we didn't have a lot of storage space either. So we all had to make decisions of what we were keeping, what was of value to us and what we could give away and what we needed to throw away, that we just would not have space to do that. So all of the whole family have had to do that. And that was quite traumatic, actually, to be honest with you. Like that week off work was very traumatic and moving down here. But, you know, you get through it because, you know, you're moving forward in that one there. And I thought, you know, the house coming down, because I suppose we made the decision, look, the house is bricks and mortar, you know, sort of. And our home is the mobile. So we have moved in that. So I was actually surprised by myself how brutal watching the house come down was. Yeah. I couldn't stand and watch it. It was brutal. You know, regardless of anything, even if it's just blocks, it was our home. So yeah, seeing the JCB coming in it, and again, sort of Aoife would often say to me, you know, this shouldn't happen. Yeah. You know, this just should not happen. Why is this happening? We should not have to move out of our home and watch it be demolished because we've done nothing wrong.
Joe, like, it's very hard for anyone, I think, to keep track of all of this. So you're on the old scheme. Is it now the council moving you on to the new scheme? You've been approved. There's another body involved now that isn't the council, and what role do they have? I mean, is it clear at the moment what the holdup is and where the holdup is?
That's the problem, Greg. It's not actually, and you know, I'm a project manager. My profession is project management. So you know, taking this on is not necessarily something that I would find as a challenge. However, all of the pieces that are outside of the council and on me to manage are all dependent now on what the council are doing. And I have asked, I've had a lot of help, and I just want to call him out. The councillor, Martin McDermott, is doing as much as he can, and he does a lot of heavy lifting in terms of trying to get answers. But councillor McDermott is not an administrator within the council. He's not responsible for administrating the scheme. And those individuals are not able to tell him when the... They're not able to tell him the timelines that are associated with these applications. Now, my gut is telling me that there are some IT challenges relative to the transition from the old scheme to the new scheme. But nobody's prepared to say it. Nobody's prepared, if that is the case, to put a timeline on how long that's going to take to resolve. And that's the key information, Greg. If I had information relative to there is a challenge internally within the council, whatever that might be, it's going to take 2 to 3 weeks to resolve. Well, then I'll stop ringing the councillors and I'll stop emailing the lead engineers and I'll stop checking my phone every day for a notification from the council and I'll leave it for that couple of weeks. But as of right now, there's no indication as to what the challenge is. Yeah. There's no indication as to why it will not be approved or has not already been approved. And until that happens, as I said, I can't do anything now. I can't speak to my lender to organise finance and I can't speak to my contractor. He had to, you know, his staff need to work. I can't give them work because
And it's a fluid situation because we don't know what the story is in terms of lending materials, contractors available. You know, this is not just a case of all right, wait 6 months. We don't know what could happen in that period. And you know, this is why journalists do or should ask the tough questions, because you ask a politician, well, why did we do it this way? And they say, well, because we need to get this going. Because if we didn't do it this way, it would delay things. And what we need to do now, and I've got the quotes ringing in my ears, we need to start getting houses through this scheme and get people back into their houses. You know, when you get criticised for trying to pin people down, just say, well, give us a date, or what do you mean by that? And the reason you ask those questions, and maybe it's not popular, is for families like yours, because you're hearing politicians say stuff like that, and it must be very curious as to, you know, what the actual, what's actually going to happen. Okay, 1 second. I just have to, I think I have another call in here that's not supposed to be in here yet, so I'll just quit that one out here. Right, okay. So the point I was making, Joe, you know, it must be very frustrating really for you guys when you hear politicians say, right, we're doing this so we can get things done more quickly.
Timeline. And again, this is not unique to ourselves. We submitted our first application to the defective concrete scheme in March 2021. That's nearly 2.5 years ago. And the second, and just as an FYI, in case some viewers don't understand it, most will, that application was inclusive of 200 pages of scientific input, structural engineering input, etc. So very, very comprehensive input to prove that we had a problem with the house and that we were eligible to get in the scheme. That was approved in about 6 months. The second stage, which was an additional 160 pages of detailed information and data points, that went in November. We're almost at a year now since that second application went in. I just do not guess the fact that that cog, that very crucial, critical cog, which is outside of our control, which we cannot influence within the council, there's something broken in the council, that piece cannot move. And I just think, I know the council have gone into an emergency meeting this morning, I think they're due to go into one at 11 o'clock. And I hope that something comes out of that in terms of homeowners that are sitting, waiting on information that cannot get it for the last 3, 4, 5 months, that there will be some form of announcement to let us know what's happening and when we can expect to get approval.
Just in relation to Primetime, I didn't get to watch it last night for a number of reasons, but my understanding is Darragh O'Brien wasn't available to speak on the show, which, Elaine, it's really quite remarkable when we have a multi-billion euro scheme that, I mean, if you think it's a good scheme, you'd be screaming from the rooftops. But to not make yourself available for a significant programme like Primetime on this issue, really, really quite telling, maybe even, well, bizarre, to say the least, I think.
You know, my 21-year-old daughter said, pointed that out to me, and she said, you know, that is bizarre that they would not come on and give some explanation. I suppose as homeowners here, that's the message we've got from government, is they do not care. You know, they don't care if we go out on the streets. They don't care if we're on prime time. They don't care if they see visuals of like Sharon Moss's house. They just do not care. They're okay with people living in those conditions. They're okay with ourselves, you know, stressed to the hilt, trying to, you know, have our get our home rebuilt. They just do. They come out with rubbish. They really, really do. And I have no faith in the government. They have so many opportunities to get this right. They did not listen to homeowners. They pushed through a bill in 2 hours with over 180 amendments. They do not care. They are doing what they want to do. They have the facts. We have been shouting at the top of our voices. They have a pyrite scheme in Leinster that is up and running, and it has different conditions than us in Donegal. Mm. They do not care.
Now, at this point, I should probably jump in to say, well, they do care because of... But if the housing minister himself is not going to pay devil's advocate for the scheme, really, how can I? Because I don't know what he thinks or what he feels or anything. OK, Aoife, how is school going for you despite all the other stuff? It's a big change. You're enjoying it, though, I hope.
I am. I'm definitely enjoying it better than I ever did primary. It's just, it's so new and so different, but like in a good way. And yeah, like, even though everything's going on here, I feel like school is like breaking away point.
That's your switch off time. You can get in there and think of other stuff. And you're the first year this year. Next year, it'll be a new crop of first years and you'll be old hat in the school then. Okay. Listen, it's been lovely having you all on, particularly you, Aoife, because I haven't spoken to you before. Thank you so very much, Elaine. Joe, is there anything you want to add just as we wrap up? I want to make sure that you feel that you've touched on everything that you feel is important to say today.
Yeah, I think I have covered it, Greg. Look, okay. I think there are lots of families out there who are trying to make the best they can of what is a flawed scheme. But now we're being held back more because the administration of the scheme just is not working. And I would implore those that are responsible for oversight within the council on the administration of the scheme to come out and be more transparent and give visibility to families who are already stressed, who just shouldn't be going through a state of limbo and, you know, with no information whatsoever relative to when they can take the next step. That's the biggest, most frustrating piece for everyone. Yeah. And we need the council to come out and correct that.
I've just got a message here, Joe, as challenging it is for you as a family to be able to go through this system and make up the difference of a scheme which very recently we were told that it is a 100% scheme. There are people saying we're not even able to access it because they simply just don't have the wherewithal to do it. And victims of this type of a crisis should not be separated out like that. It's terrible, isn't it? We should all be equal, Elaine.
Absolutely. I mean, we think ourselves really lucky. Although all this happens, we always say to ourselves we're lucky because we have some savings, we've been able to borrow from family, you know, and we are just of the mindset we need to get this done, you know. So putting ourselves into debt has to be done, I suppose, you know. But I absolutely, you know, even sort of being able to get the mobiles and move out. Otherwise, we would be living in that house still. And all of us felt unsafe in it. So we feel lucky that we're out of our house. We feel lucky that we're at the stage we're at.
Okay.
And Greg, just to add to that, it has been challenging, extremely difficult, and a lot of work to get to where we're at today. And to your point, there are vulnerable people out there, you know, old age pensioners, people, you know, potentially with mobility and disability type issues. I can tell you from my experience of getting us to where we are now, just in terms of getting mobiles put on site and having the house demolished, that is not an easy ask of people. And the fact that there's no end-to-end care for the vulnerable that are impacted by this crisis needs to change. That has to be addressed. There is no way vulnerable citizens are going to be able to take on what we've done and then the build afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. And your skill sets that you have as well worked in your favour as well, I'm sure. Yeah. Okay, listen, thanks very much, Joe, Elaine, and you particularly, Aoife. Have a lovely day. Thank you so very much indeed. Okay, that was the Morgan family's situation. Keep your calls, comments coming into us, 08660 25000. Okay, Doug, we're going to stay with this issue because, as you heard a little earlier on, a series of meetings is taking place, information evenings being hosted by MAG, the Mike Action Group, which, it's worth pointing out, does not actually endorse this defective concrete block scheme as it stands, but I suppose it's the only show in town at the moment. Lisa Hone, Chair of MAG, thanks so much for joining us. I do appreciate your time.
Thanks, Greg.
The more I talk to people, Lisa, the less I got the impression that, you know, anyone feels that can either work with it at all or work within it. But be that as it may, it is what's there. And we're coming off the back of a very well-attended meeting in On Green On, in Bird On Green On Hotel, wasn't it? That was in July. Yeah. And there's a new series of meetings coming up now.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we just felt there was a need. We were getting a huge amount of inquiries after the implementation of the scheme in early July. So we just felt there was a need to go and have a dialogue with homeowners and really put the information out there as best we could with the information that we had at the time in a very concise and clear-cut, easily digestible way, because that just wasn't out there. There was huge documentation out there, but it wasn't put in a format that kind of made it easier to people to get their heads around the scheme. And, you know, there was a huge turnout to that, which I think, you know, like we had sort of detected, obviously, from the information coming into us and the queries coming into us, that there just was not the clarity about how the scheme works that people need. Now, as we say, we do not endorse the scheme as it stands at the moment, because there are fundamental issues around the science, around finance, around exclusions, around support, especially for the vulnerable, as Joe rightly pointed out. So, but in saying that, we are still getting a huge number of inquiries in terms of people trying to get their heads around how it does work at the moment. So what we're doing is, because we know that maybe everybody couldn't get to the meeting in July, we're going out to the community. We've tried to set up a series of meetings that hit a lot of the areas that we know are highly impacted. So trying to make it easy for people to get there. We will give them as best, as clear-cut information as we have at the time. As Joe really rightly pointed out, there is still a lot of confusion. There is grey, you know, like the authorities who are implementing the scheme have a lot of answers questions to respond to right now. And that's, so we will do our best with the information we have. We constantly try and get the most up-to-date information. And we will try and give people a good insight to how it works.
So just not to go through it now, because there's different people in different areas that are all going to be there and no one person's going to be across it all. But if someone is sitting there and the pennies dropped, they've got defective concrete blocks, there's cracks in the house, and they're going, right, there's a new scheme here, we need to get a test done. Like, is there a simple procedure that they can engage in now?
Yeah, the new scheme works differently. So effectively, you don't commission the full IS465 engineers report that was the previous entry to the old scheme. The way it works now is there is a document called a BCA, a building condition assessment, and that can be done by what they call a competent building professional. And that's generally a certified engineer, architect or surveyor. And the guidelines from the government are that BCA report should cost about £500 to £750. And it's almost like the very first assessment. If the engineer come out to your house with the previous scheme, it's like a visual assessment in terms of them noting down sort of, you know, what damage they can see. They might measure cracks, you know, and there's a set format that they had to put that information into. Because effectively, to gain entry to the new scheme, there's two elements. The first one is an administrative element. So you've got to tick all the boxes with regard to your eligibility, your circumstances, all the information that has to be supplied to Donegal County Council. That's the first thing. So that's the first one. And then the second thing is that you've got to fulfill the criteria of the BCA, and that is assessed by the housing agency. So if Donegal County Council deem you eligible from an administrative level, then they will be happy to look at the BCA report. The housing agency will be happy to look at the BCA report.
And is the BCA report, is the BCA report based off the visual inspection, or at that point is it okay? It is, but where
is it's that's basically where the damage threshold comes in, Greg. You've maybe have heard me talk about that, the damage threshold, where there's a specific definition where they're looking for a particular pattern of cracking and a particular width, a minimum of 1 millimetre.
And how do you find out who can do that for you, or how do you get someone around to your house?
Well, that is the million-dollar question at the moment, and that is one of the big obstacles with regard to the new scheme. What the authorities, what government or the local authority or whoever have not engaged with those societies of surveyors, architects. It is basically, as far as we can understand at the moment, is basically down to the homeowner to go and find an engineer, a surveyor, an architect who will do the BCA. But, like, you know, what should have happened is there should have been a whole team of these type of building professionals who would have been trained, understand the scheme, understand the BCA, understand the issue. But that has not happened.
But if I wanted to get my house tested now, is there a list of people?
No, it's one of the number one questions that we're getting right now is, who do I contact to get a BCA report done? So effectively, there's an obstacle straight off because, again, the work has not been done. The infrastructure has not been put in place to make it easy for homeowners to actually access the people they need to access to get over the first hurdle with regard to getting into this scheme. So it's this, it just goes back to this lack of organisation and not doing the work.
And what if I
getting all the blocks in place to make this scheme work?
And what if I live in a council house and the corners are gone and there's damp there's damp in the bedrooms and I can't get any meaningful interaction with the council? Is that separate because they're not private homeowners?
Yeah, I mean, effectively, the council should be dealing with their own social housing
stock. Yeah.
So the council, that will be their own scheme. Mm-hmm. They will handle that in their own way. Yeah. So the council, that is the contact point for anybody who's in social housing, who's dealing with this issue. Absolutely, go straight to the council.
All right. Okay. Right. So the meetings are taking place as follows. Monday, the 11th of September at 7 p.m. in the Malinhead Community Centre. Tuesday, the 19th of September at the Rye Community Centre. Thursday, the 28th of September, 7 p.m. Greencastle Community Centre. Monday, the 2nd of October, 7 p.m. Jackson's Hotel, Ballybuffet. Tuesday, 10th of October, 7 p.m. Station House Hotel, Letterkenny. Monday, 16th October, 7 p.m. Inishowen Gateway Hotel, Buncrana. And all of these dates and times and venues will be on the MAG Facebook page, I've no doubt, and shared more broadly. But do you find these meetings are just going to, they're important, but perhaps compound frustration? Because even the question as to how one might even get on the scheme or even begin the process of getting on the scheme, it's a convoluted process and a difficult question to answer.
Yeah, I mean, it's not ideal, Greg, but I think what we're trying to do is our best in very difficult circumstances.
It's not a criticism of MAG. Yeah. You can only explain the scheme as it is. It's not the you can't change the scheme.
That's it. And I think it's important. I mean, I think what we're detecting is there's different sort of cohorts of people. There's people who have tried to engage with the scheme and they're trying to understand like where they go next. But what we've also found is there's a considerable number of people who I think have almost had this kind of on the long finger, knew that there was the new scheme was coming at some point, and kind of thought, well, I'm going to wait until then. So there's a lot of people.
There's a third cohort. Wait, there's a third cohort waiting to find out if foundations are going to be included.
Yeah.
And let me ask you: are in any great number houses being rebuilt under the old scheme or the new scheme if they've been moved over? Like, are there a series of houses being built at the moment through the defective concrete block scheme?
The majority of houses that have had remediation done to them are not option ones. The majority are, you know, a partial remediation, so to speak. I met for the first time somebody who's actually gone through the whole process. We were at the Clonmany show, just making, you know, actually giving publicity to the petition, which actually, if you've not signed it, the EU petition, please get online and please sign it. But effectively, he was the first person that I've met through talking to loads and loads and loads of homeowners all the time. So that's one person that I know that's gone through the whole option one. Okay. The majority that have remediated houses are, like I say, partial remediations.
Okay.
But and the majority are, in terms of people who are in the scheme, they are either passed, they've got a decision for stage one, or they're sitting with the housing agency. Mm. There's a very, very small number of homeowners who are trying to move beyond that into stage two, but they are in the likes of the Morgan situation where they are absolutely stymied at the moment because the administration just seems to be
grinding. And just very, very briefly, in 20 seconds, what did you think of the housing minister not defending his scheme last night?
I have to say it was totally and utterly predictable, because the silence since this scheme was unveiled on the 3rd of July from government has been absolutely deafening. And I think that speaks volumes. And can I just say, Greg, what we will be doing is we will be sending an invite to Dara O'Brien, all his officials and experts who were involved in the designing of the scheme, to come and attend one of these public meetings. And we will have a chair there for Dara O'Brien. It's absolute. We will fit in with his schedule. We will reconvene a meeting if that has to happen, or he can attend one of these meetings. But it is absolutely abominable that they will not stand over the scheme that they have designed and answer the questions and concerns of the people who have to use it.
Thanks very much, Lisa. I appreciate your time. Take care. Lisa Hone there, back after the news.